Blog Talk Radio.
Dolphins don't stop, man. It's week after week after week. We just keep talking about how the teams just keep rolling on, and the Dolphins are one of them. We're going to talk about them later. We want to talk about another beatdown that happened in Florida, more central Florida. The Buccaneers whooping up on the Seahawks. Seattle travels nearly 3,000 miles to score 5 points, please, on. Talk to us, man. What's the temperature in the water up there in the Northwest, man?
Yeah, the temperature in the water up here in the 206 Killer Cam is lukewarm. I mean, everybody knew that playing the first game without Earl Thomas was going to be an experiment, and we weren't quite sure exactly what to expect from it. And the first 10 minutes of the first quarter was very ugly, and the rest of the 50 minutes, as far as the defense is concerned, was pretty spectacular. Held them to 2 touchdowns. I mean, that's hold your head down about with regards to the offense. Could never get the running game going. The offensive line looked very suspect. A lot of stunts and blitzes were very successful. The corners were able to shut down some of those pedestrian receivers that people refer to. And, you know, there were turnovers. Russell Wilson, you know, unusually threw 2 picks. Jimmy Graham fumbled the ball one time. And, you know, we left out of there in Tampa Bay, like you say, across the country after a holiday. Started out a little sluggish. Wasn't able to recapture the magic they had the last 3 weeks. And, you know, these things happen sometimes in the NFL. I'm going to leave it at that.
I'm not too familiar with teams flying across the country and getting L's here recently. My team flew across the country and got W's. So I'm not so familiar with that. We were cheated out of the game at the beginning of the season, but we made a strong comeback.
But you did fairly warn
the fans and myself that Mr. Earl Thomas would be critical to the game. But that's on the defensive end. What about on the offensive end where they can't seem to get anything going? Their running backs shows any sign of fame and stardom, he gets hurt. The quarterback is doing all he can, but that seems to be running out. The pedestrian receivers, I mean, they are what they are. Where's the pocket rocket? Pocket locket? Where's this kid been at? Has there been a sighting of number 16 all season?
Okay, as I said earlier, it was a little bit of an anomaly. In the last 3 games prior to this game, they had been scoring 30 points a game against the Patriots, the Bills, and the Eagles, all pretty formidable defenses. Again, traveling across the country, not having all of their, you know, weapons at their disposal, and in addition, a little bit of a reconfiguration on the offensive line, most notably the center, and they made a huge difference. I mean, take nothing away from those guys. They came off of a big win in Kansas City, still feeling themselves, wanted the, 2-time Super Bowl representatives the last 3 years to come into their house, measure themselves, and, man, hats off to them. Big Mike Evans played great. Jameis Winston was poised. That defense was ready to shut down the running game. Russell Wilson being the leading rusher with 80 yards, that's terrible. But nothing that can't be fixed.
Yeah.
Nothing that can't be fixed. And they will still end up with the number two seed in the NFC. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, well, you know, the Bucks probably were late in the waiting. They had this game circled on their calendar, you know, as a litmus test for them. And they have the good components. They do have the running game. They do have a poised quarterback with some strong receivers. So, like as you mentioned, these things happen. But how about the Saints running it up on the Rams? I think you picked New Orleans, so you weren't that surprised by it. But, you know, not only did New Orleans win, apparently the coach said they're going for 50 today.
To be quite honest with you, I was certainly surprised with how easy they were able to score on that Greg Williams defense, considering how intimate knowledge that he had of the Saints offense and how many times he had seen them. It was kind of embarrassing, and it looked like Sean Payton was really trying to prove a point of having to sit out that year and lose that $3 million, or however much it was. It might have even been $5 million. That he had to lose that year, that he was not going to let that go, was not going to let that ride without really making a statement on it. And, you know, I don't think Drew Brees really appreciated losing a year off of his career with the general manager and the coach being gone. And, you know, they really wanted to prove a point that, you know, although I'm not going to say it's 100% Greg Williams' fault, because I think that everybody, quite honestly, had some knowledge of what was going on, but they wanted to move away from that and let him know that, man, we've turned the page and didn't appreciate the penalties that we had to endure because of, you know, what was going on with that bounty cake.
Well, maybe now they can turn the page. maybe now they can turn the page, because apparently there was some harsh feelings still being held up there by the Saints. The Vikings on the way to starting another winning streak. They get their win on Turkey Day over the Detroit Lions, and the Cowboys just keep on rolling. I mean, what else can we say? They rolled up Washington pretty convincingly, and the Raiders also got their W. But I think the game of the weekend was the Chiefs outlasting the Broncos. Did you see the defensive struggle that game ended up being?
Oh, boy, it was definitely a blow for blow. Neither team was giving up anything. And, you know, that game obviously comes down to the questionable call from Kubiak. In my opinion, I think he should have punted the ball. I can understand from a certain perspective if you have a kicker that's kind of had some type of history of making, you know, field goals in the 55 to 62-yard range, that maybe you might take that chance. But in overtime, that just seems like a very questionable call to me.
Well, yeah, it was a questionable call, but, he's trying to get some points on the board, and, you know, can't fault him totally for that. But a 62-yard field goal was, you know, he didn't have great Blake Zerline in back there, I can say that. But he was thinking there in the altitude, maybe that ball will travel a little further. That's about all I can say. But, you know, just watching the defensive ends get after it, man, I tell you what, those three guys they had on the field, Mack, Ware, and the other guy, the Super Bowl.
Von Miller and Houston and Ware all got at it quite ferociously, and it was definitely a spectacular event to watch as far as the pass rushing is concerned.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was a pleasure to watch there. And I'm not going to harsh on it too much. It's getting to be all that, but the Dolphins win again, make it six straight over the San Francisco 49ers as expected. So kudos to them for moving. And we'll talk about Ryan Tannehill here in a moment, but the Dolphins continue to winning streak, led partially by Ryan Tannehill on the Saints. Is there a hotter quarterback in the league right now than okay, I'll give Dak the credit. He does have 10 wins in a row. But is there a hotter quarterback?
No.
Nope. We'll have to momentarily. But Mr. Cleveland, you get the trifecta this week. You wanted to pick 13 picks, 13 correct picks to 11. So kudos to you. You had KC. You had KC winning. You had San Diego winning. And who else you have winning over me? You had New Orleans, so that was a good call on you to win that. Picks against the spread, you had two out of three, so good choice on that. Who didn't make it? I don't think Pittsburgh, they didn't win by nine. I don't think Pittsburgh won by nine. Nonetheless, you got two out of three right. What I learned from last week, Packers may have a little bit of life left. The game on Sunday, do you think was that playing the busted chumps, or was that a revival of sorts for your boy Aaron Rodgers?
Can't call the Philadelphia Eagles a bunch of chumps. It started out with three straight wins, and Jim Schwartz has that defense playing pretty well, top 10 defense in the league. So I think it's more indicative of Aaron Rodgers not wanting to hear all that chit-chat that people are talking about him, and you know, his demotion from elite status over the last 3 weeks. You know, if somebody's a two-time MVP, that type of talk, I'm sure, rubs them the wrong way. And let's just get on Monday night and, you know, see what my receivers can do and see if I can hit him, you know, in the right situation and make that happen and kind of turn things around. You know, season's kind of in jeopardy. Everybody's hitting the panic button. So, yeah. It was a big victory for them. Had they lost that game, it would have been all doom and gloom over there, and they would have been blaming the defense and probably looking at the coach a little bit funny, a little sideways.
Yeah, well, it turns out they're looking at the coach a little funny anyway, but yeah, the defense, obviously, as they need to start replacing their players, like primarily their linebackers with long hair that don't make tackles. They need to start replacing those guys. The Seahawks, man, they proved in their trip out to Florida last week that they have more weaknesses than strengths on the team. Is that how you feel about them? I mean, that's kind of what I saw. The injuries is really impacting their squad. But when you say injuries, every team has to deal with injuries. So how far can you let that go? No running game. The second year in a row where the offensive line has been struggling, whether it's identifying the proper talent, which, you know, you want to give the organization the nod on identifying talent with the draft they've been making, or is it simply ignoring the offensive line and not putting that much of a priority on it? But why hasn't the offensive line improved? Why haven't they improved in the receiver in a game breaker? I'm talking about not just somebody to put on the number 81 through 89 uniform. I'm talking about game breakers. Why haven't they improved in that area or utilizing them, we should say, because we know there was a problem utilizing the game breaker they had in Percy Harvin. But what is it in that sense, or is that a piece of conversation? There's no running game, no ideal running game. They're struggling covering tight ends in the backfield, in the defensive backfield, and that happens when they were healthy. So what is those – tell me some strengths that, outside number three, behind the quarterback, behind center, what are some strengths of the Seattle Seahawks right now?
Well, Ken, I'm glad you're bringing up all these questions, and let me address these one by one, if I may. First of all, as far as the offensive line is concerned, the way the Seahawks are built, the money for the salary cap is allocated to other places, most notably a defense that's been the number one defense in the league for 4 years in a row and is top five this year and quite possibly could retain that number one status for a fifth year in a row, an NFL record. With regards to the running game, C.J. Procise was an injection and infusion into the running game. Unfortunately, a little fragile, got hurt, the number one running back from last year, Thomas Rawls, is not 100% healthy. He's doing the best he can. So in the meantime, you know, we have to do the best of what we have. Special teams is still way up there. Stephen Hauschka, one of the top five kickers in the league, so we can't fault them for that. With regards to the pedestrian receivers that you referred to, the MVP caliber quarterback for the first 6 weeks had an ankle and a knee injury, so wasn't able to be the Russell Wilson that we know him to be in the past. So therefore, not having the same mobility allowing his receivers to get open had been an issue. Doug Baldwin still doing his thing. Jimmy Graham has the most yards of any tight end in the NFL. So you can't say that they're not, you know, using the weapons at their disposal to the best of their ability. So I'm not quite sure what all these other weaknesses, other than the offensive line and the running game not being what it was due to injury previously, and the quarterback, the MVP caliber quarterback that I mentioned previously, not being 100% healthy. So the weaknesses, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. At the end of the day, I believe they still have the second best record in the NFL. In the NFC, is that not correct?
In the NFC, yes, you are correct.
Okay, okay. I was just double checking. I was just double checking.
That was good synopsis you presented to the table. I'm just trying to help you and your fans actually see some positive, and I knew that you would bring it out. So I knew you would speak the positive, and you could remove and pull your friends and family from the ledge of the I-90 and the 520 right now. So nobody's jumping
in
the bridge.
Exactly.
Okay. So in the confidence pick, I see you conveniently see also removed from your picks for last week, but nonetheless, you were 100% in your 15 points.
Don't you double down when you sleep again? Don't you double down?
Oh my goodness! So I have 14, so I wasn't too far behind you there, big fella. And you're still behind for the year, so slow down there.
Wow, I'm down by one. Wow, okay, all right,
okay. And then I had a question, or I made a statement that I wanted to follow up on last week. Is Ryan Tannehill evolving in this six-game winning streak into an elite quarterback? And I say yes, he is evolving. He is not elite today, but he's evolving in the elite. And then I need to preface this by saying, you know, if I had any one of these, an opportunity to get any one of these quarterbacks, I'd certainly get them tomorrow if I could, regardless of how much progression Ryan has shown within the last month and a half. I'd get Derek Carr, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, and Andy Luck. Eli Manning, Joe Flacco, Big Ben, Andy Dalton, question mark, Matthew Stafford, question mark, Cam Newton, Matt Ryan. Those are certain guys, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 quarterbacks I would pick before Ryan Tannehill. Or I would take
You only missed two. That was impressive. That was fairly objective.
I mean, there's only one. Winston is the question mark. But I'm sorry.
I'm saying did I hear Marcus Mariota?
Oh no, I wouldn't take Marcus Mariota right now
ahead of
Tannehill.
All right. Oh my goodness. When's the last time you were out in Miami? You got heat stroke out there.
Here we go to the Tennessee Titans. Right now, I would not take Marcus Mariota.
You would rather? No. Okay. Okay. All right.
But long,
all right.
Let me preface my comment. Long term, I'm gonna suppose Mariota's gonna have a better career. But right now, 5 years in, I still stick with Ryan Tannehill. And then, who is your other quarterback?
Tyrod Taylor. I mean, I didn't hear his name get called either.
Come on. I'm not even confident on that. I don't know. Tyrod Taylor.
I mean, to be quite honest, Your quarterback is the third best quarterback in the AFC East, as far as I'm concerned.
Behind
Tyrod. I'm gonna go TB12 Tyrod and then your guy. I mean, obviously he's better than Fitzpatrick. Let's not get crazy about it, but yeah.
What is Tyrod instead of elusiveness, which to me, as an NFL quarterback, I'm not sure if I want him. But if I'm playing flag football, high school football, or college football, Tyrod's a heck of an athlete. He's a great athlete. I can run option. I can run the wildcat. I can do a lot of different things. In the NFL, he's not my ideal NFL quarterback. But I'm just interested. What do you see impressive about Tyrod Taylor outside of his elusiveness, which is goes unspoken for?
I see his elusiveness, his leadership, his ability to extend plays and hit the open man when he has the opportunity. Let's not get carried away here. The Dolphins are exactly one game better than the Buffalo Bills. I don't recall the Miami Dolphins beating the New England Patriots. I do recall the Buffalo Bills beating the New England Patriots. So
it wasn't on the back of the arm of Tyrod Taylor. However you want to twist it. It was not.
Tyrod Taylor has been doing this without Sammy Watkins. He's been doing it without Robert Woods for a majority of the time. Once he gets those weapons back at his disposal, I mean, come on, there's only five games left here, Playboy. I don't know. I don't know if the Dolphins are going to get that second place.
Six and five is one game worse, as you mentioned, the 7-4. So I'll take a better record all day. And come on, stop it with Tyrod Taylor. Man, stop, please. Get out of here. I'm still not convinced of what you see in Tyrod Taylor, and I'm laughing at you. My buddy's a big Virginia Tech honk, and he bleeds that purple and fluorescent or whatever they wear out there, and talking about Tyrod Taylor. Get out of here with that guy, please. Now you got me looking at the Buffalo Bills and who they're playing this week. They play the Raiders, and so you're going to think you got Buffalo. Because of Tyrod Taylor.
I do have Buffalo.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying? Favoritism creeps in here, but that's okay. That's how I win the season again. I got Ken Ryan. What I'm looking to see this week is, can Ryan Tannehill win the game against the Ravens? Now, this will be an impressive win. Outside of being in the stadium 2 weeks ago and watching them score – two touchdowns in the last 6 minutes of the football game against the vaulted Los Angeles Rams. That was impressive. Beating the Baltimore Ravens. Chefs, they're not your dad's Baltimore Ravens, but they're still pretty good nonetheless. That would be impressive. What do you say? What are you looking to see this week?
I am looking to see what happens in the New Orleans game. That's going to be critical, because as far as I see, the Seattle Seahawks, the optics in their rear view mirror are closer than they appear. And so if there's not going to be any separation with the Falcons and the Detroit Lions, then it all comes down to whether or not the Saints can inject themselves into the conversation.
So other than
the Seahawks beating the Carolina Panthers, that's the next most exciting game.
You're picking you pick New Orleans based on Seattle needing New Orleans to beat Detroit. That's why you pick New Orleans.
I picked New Orleans based on the fact that the Saints make sure that you have to have the capability to score 25 to 30 points. I mean, they beat my Seahawks. It was kind of weird how they did it. I'm not going to get into specifics about it, penalties and whatnot. But all I'm going to say is that watching the Saints over the last 4 or 5 weeks, you got to be able to score 25 to 30 points.
It was.
And trying to outscore them, difficult task at home.
We'll see how that shakes out. I trust Detroit's defense a little bit more than New Orleans' defense, although both of them are liable to give up 35 points on Sunday. So we'll see how this one shakes out. I want to see how the Seahawks can bounce back against the defending NFC champion this Sunday. They have them at home. They're coming off a loss. They've got some grass in their teeth still from Tampa Bay out there, some of that lost grass. So let's see how they pick their teeth out and can they rebound against the Carolina Panthers, who have little to no life left at all. How do you think this game go down? Well, I think you picked Seattle, so we know how you think
it's going to be. I did pick Seattle, but it's going to be rough. So I go down to the last 45 seconds of the game. Everybody knows that for the last 5 years that we played the Panthers, it's come down to one possession. I mean, so it's not like, we dominate them in any way, shape, form, or fashion, not even in the playoffs. I mean, you know, they play games that are 12-7 and 14-12 and, 13-9. So it's not like it's a blowout on, either side. And I'm sorry, I forgot to mention in my defense of the Seahawks earlier that for 100 games in a row, they had never trailed by more than 7 points going into the fourth quarter until that last game. So when you're talking about 1 out of 100, I think you can kind of throw out that game as kind of somewhat of a statistical anomaly that doesn't really pertain to what they really do typically, but I just wanted to mention that. 100 straight games.
What was the score of that game the other day? I just wanted to know.
14-5.
Okay.
It was 14-5. It was the first game in 100 games that they had trailed by more than 7 points in the fourth quarter. 100.
Okay. You like that, huh? That's impressive to you?
That's a pretty round, nice, cool sounding number, huh? 100.
Let me ask you another question, since you want to bring this topic back up. How many games have they lost scoring less than single digits this season?
Four. No, they only lost four games. They only lost three games. They lost what?
Yeah.
So they lost, 9-3.
The tie was 9-3.
There's one. They lost to the Saints by, I think, 4 points. There's two. And their other loss is to these guys.
The Rams.
No. So nine, 6-4.
You need to score points to win.
For an average of 6.3 points a game in their losses. Yeah.
You need to score points to win, okay?
You do.
I think they're challenged scoring points, and that's my concern with the Seahawks. Not to make this a bashing session, but that's my concern with the Seahawks, is that they need to score points to win, and they struggle to do that because no running game,
at times,
lack
except
of
for, except for in the last three games prior to this game, they had scored 30 points a game, including 31 at New England, including 31 against the Bills' defense, and another 33 against the Eagles. We're talking about three top 15 defenses.
Okay, well, so you're saying it's a wash because they have three terrible losses with three big-time wins. Okay, I'll give you that. That's still my concern, is going into the playoffs, is how comfortable are you with them scoring points. That's my huge concern. Not the quarterback, but their just overall ability to score points.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you that there's no concern with them scoring points, because there have been periods in the season where they have had difficulty doing that. And there have been periods in the season when the offensive line looked very, very average, or less than average, to be quite honest with you. So I get that. And the running game is not kicked in the way it's supposed to. So I'm not saying that there's, not holes that need to be filled, but when the Seahawks offense is clicking on all cylinders, it's top 10.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to close on that note. Thanks for tuning in. Another fantastic week. Cleavon, thanks for your participation. And check your email. I think you got some emails to look at.
Right, right on, bro. And good luck. Good luck to the Dolphins and Ravens this week.
Yes, sir. Have a good one.
All right. Peace.
Later.